just for clarification of the focus and topic, the morning, I want to spend mostly just in talking about teachings and the practices and just meditate. And the afternoon will bring that awareness, that mindfulness, that compassion to look more closely at whatever challenges and difficulties we face. A couple of simple examples and some readings to share with you. I remember being angry at a friend for a long time and holding a grudge, which didn't feel very good. And I would practice on retreat, forgive, forgive, and the more I would try to forgive, the more I would be aware of how angry I was and how much I was holding on and how hurt I was and how right I was and all of that stuff. And, whenever I would see him, that's what would come up, that kind of energy. And then somehow, through the grace of something, I was able to actually let go and forgive. It was really fascinating, because then I would see him as an old college buddy. And having forgiven, I mean, he hadn't done a thing. He was still the same person. But when I saw him, he was completely different. The only thing that changed was how I was looking at him. He hadn't done a thing, but I saw him completely different. A simple example. And we've heard this 1,000 times, but it's so crazily simple. The glass of water that's half full or half empty, the optimist or the pessimist of how we choose to see what's happening, has direct clinical, psychological, neurological, physiological, biological effects on the mind and the body. I got into this field by studying the work of Kenneth Pelletier, who wrote a book years ago, Mind as Healer, Mind as Slayer. So most of my career has been about helping people have their mind be the healer by seeing and being with the part of it that is slaying them without judgment. Because we have to see it. We first have to recognize. So I'll start talking in letters, the R word of resilience. We have to first recognize. We have to see what's happening. We have to become aware. We have to be calm in the presence of it to see it clearly. That's what our mindfulness does. It helps us see the truth. This is the punchline of the whole day. Sometimes I wait till the end of the day. Sometimes I feel it's better to give it in the beginning. Who knows? You just trust your intuition. It's the truth that liberates, not your effort to be free. Simple concept. But it's not easy to let go of our effort to be free and the attachment that that brings. It doesn't mean, again, I'll say it 1,000 times, that there aren't things to do to treat a condition or that we let go of, oh, this is great, I have this thing. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying to start, and I'll give another example, clinical example, because I think it's hopefully instructive for each of us and how we relate to ourselves. That's all I want to support you with today. I want to help you look inside, help you see the truth of what's there in your mind and your body and heart and give you some perspectives and ways of relating to them and see what happens and experience that and gain insight. That's what insight practice is. The truth shows itself to you. You can't grasp after it. It doesn't come. I want that. No, it will come. Anybody here can relate to what I'm going to share with you? Among my many challenges is, would you rather be right or would you rather be at peace? Anybody here ever have that quality of energy going on in your mind and body and heart? And the more you think you're right and you won't let go, the more you suffer because you won't let go and you are right, but it doesn't matter in that regard. You understand what I'm saying? So whatever's going on, the real reality is looking inside of ourselves and facing our own truth. And who knows the three characteristics of life? There are four noble truths, and the first is that there's suffering, and thankfully, there's an end to suffering and a path to end our suffering. And my attachment to being right caused more suffering than whatever I was being right about, and my frustration about it and how I dealt with it. We just have to look at our political reality now in our culture and what's happening, all the suffering that's from that, attachments and struggles. Okay. So the serenity prayer, it's to be at peace in the storm. It's not freedom from the storm, it's peace in the storm. Right? Accept the things I can't change. Change what I can and have the wisdom to know the difference, and I would add and bring some compassion to it. That's life. I teach at a senior center in Westport. Every week, somebody's got a new diagnosis. Every week, somebody in their life died. Every week, something happens that's life. It didn't happen to them only. I mean, it's painful, it's difficult, it's challenging, and it's life. It's what is. So we always relate to what's happening to us as if it shouldn't be happening. We don't want it to be happening, and we're right about that, but it's happening. And our challenge is, how do we face it with as much compassion and wisdom? So one other example of the importance of these intentions, and we'll move on to the next sheet and then another meditation. So in the clinical world, there are many reasons, speaking now as a holistic doctor, for why a person is obese. Clinical, genetic, environmental, nutritional, attitudinal, psychological, spiritual, karmic, you can name it, but a person is struggling with weight as an issue. And in our culture, I use this to talk about mind-body, the recidivism rate in obesity is over 90%, meaning people lose the weight, their body is capable of losing 100 pounds, and then they gain it back because they don't keep it. This brings in the context of consciousness, of how are we seeing our truth. Einstein, you may have heard this line, you can't solve a problem with the same consciousness that created it. Right? It's easy to say, change your consciousness and you'll be fine. Well, this is what meditation does. It helps us see. And the more we see clearly and the more we bring compassion, little by little by little, we see the truth. Often a truth we don't want to see about life, about who we are, about suffering. But again, the whole point is for us to be alive and live life and enjoy life and be happy. So I know we're talking about pain and suffering, but the purpose is to be happy. And I don't want one iota of what Stephen Hawking had to go through with his illness, or Tuesdays with Maury, or Michael J. Fox, or Nelson Mandela of 27 years in jail, or whatever. That's the stuff that they had to come to terms with. But I will take like one little piece of their ability to face it and have compassion and respond to it and be resilient in the face of those challenges. And that's what we're all asked to do, because we all have our cross to bear, as it were, as I see it. And if people are familiar, it's not my world, but I know it from my work, about recovery in 12 steps, what happens in that? The person is struggling with an addiction. When do they recover? When they face the truth of it. When they say, I've lost my wife, I've lost my job, I've lost my money, I've lost this, and they still don't go into recovery. There's still denial, avoidance, rejection, whatever. No judgment, just at some point they go, hi, my name is so-and-so, and I'm an alcoholic, and my life has become unmanageable, and I came to believe that a power greater than myself, I face the truth of it. I'm really glad I'm an alcoholic. They accept that reality. And that acceptance is the beginning of transformation into their recovery. And they go to meetings every week to remind themselves this is the truth. Not to identify with it, not to be stuck in it, to transcend it, to transform it. That shift in relationship is a psychological shift, and as a mind-body doctor, it's a physiological shift as well for healing. Right? There's a whole host of other things I'm not here to speak on the mind-body in that context. But back to the obesity. So how would you relate to a patient who comes to you, who tells you that they've lost and gained 100 pounds 10 times? They did Nutrisystem, Jenny Craig, Oprah, this program, Diet LA, whatever. South Beach, North Beach, East Beach, and they're all fine. I'm not here to judge that. With deep compassion for that reality, and there are clinical issues and thyroid issues and microbiome issues and digestive issues and leaky gut issues. There's a whole host of things treating the whole person, of course. But the one thing those programs don't do is shifting the consciousness of the person. Now, the patient will come to me as a last resort sometimes, because I don't have a program to lose weight. I don't have, here, this is what we're going to do to get you there. I have, let's see how to be with this and then do something and integrate that. And I said, so why do you want to lose weight and how do you feel about it? What's your relation? She says, how would you feel after going through that 10 times, trying and failing, trying and failing? I'm fat and ugly and I hate myself. The shame of failure, the shame of obesity, the shame of the whole nine yards. Not to mention, in 20 years, never really dealing with the underlying cause of what might have been there. Again, this is not just a simple thing. So I say to myself, well, I'm an naturopath. I can give you a much better diet. I can individualize. We can look at your nutrition and your food allergies and your digestion. We can come up with a really excellent clinical plan to address your biological, physiological context. She may have already had that done. The whole point of me emphasizing these intentions is I want you to get a sense if you think there's any difference if someone says to her, Mrs. Jones, I'm happy to help you lose weight, but I don't know that weight is your issue. I think it's a symptom of something deeper. It's real. You will be healthier. Your blood pressure will come down. Your back will feel better. Your digestion will be improved. Your self-esteem will be enhanced. So it's a wonderful goal, and I want to support you in it. But I can't reinforce an intention that says you're fat and ugly and you hate yourself. Because if I give you a diet and work with you in that way, I'm telling you, you're right. Because that's what ended up happening. And this is a paradox, because she don't want what I'm telling her. She wants to get me, I need to lose 100 pounds. I'm miserable. Get me out of here. And I said to her, well, Mrs. Jones, I'm happy to give you a better diet or refer you. There are other doctors, naturopaths I know who are even better than me and all of that stuff. And you need that, too. But I don't recommend doing that again until you can tell me you want to lose weight because you love yourself. How about we work on that? What do you think happened? Well, she's one of not that many patients willing to look at that, right? She was willing to face that truth, to see what it was about, and to listen to it, and to be with it. Not, I don't want to lose weight, not, I don't need a diet, not, I don't need to eat differently, but I need to shift something about it. And the paradox is, as soon as she did that, she didn't need me to tell her, don't eat this and don't eat that and do this and do that. She had a whole different consciousness about her relationship to her experience. I'm not presenting an either or. I'm presenting a both and. You follow? Healing and curing. Doing and being. Not knowing and knowing. Seven intentions of being in the moment and still wanting to move forward. So the next sheet on, I want to move along because the next sheet, my hope is this is not meant to be a be-all and do-all one-day workshop that gives you, I want to give you resources to take with you. So the second one, who would like to read, so you don't get tired of my voice, but by the end of the day, who would like to read this poem, which I think is very instructive and very important. And I remind myself of it as a beginning meditator every time I meditate with the guest house. You all may have heard of it, but it's really simple, but it presents the context of what I'm sharing with you today, that your pain is your teacher. And can you welcome it? Would anybody like to read that? Thank you.
The guest house. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they are a crowd of sorrows, who bargain to sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. Maybe clear you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door, laughing, and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from the earth.
Okay, thank you. So just imagine if we could actually be grateful for whatever was there. It doesn't mean we're happy it's there. It doesn't mean we don't want it to go away. It just means we're not attached to get rid of it. We can listen to it, relate to it, be with it in a different way. Not easy. And then do what we need to do that's appropriate with a different energy that's more loving and more compassionate. By facing the truth of it. Free, and these intentions really assist us to do that. This comes from, you're probably familiar with Jon Kabat-Zinn and MBSR. I didn't take MBSR, I'd done a lot of this work prior to that, but this is from his book, Full Catastrophe Living. The title says it all. Facing, it doesn't say get rid of, it says facing your stress, your pain, and your illness. And I, in my own teaching, go beyond stress and it's beyond facing it, transform it. Transform it into a journey of healing and awakening. Are you guys, gals and guys, familiar with Sounds True? I'm sure you are. Okay. Sounds True. Or Tara Brach, Jack Kornfield, people of that ilk. Eckhart Tolle. Okay. Sounds True is an online resource of teachers who write books and offer teachings, and it's a big online thing now with audio and video and summits and teachings. And it's a way to spread their teachings and marketing audio tapes and books. And Sounds True is is one of the major, used to be New Age, I don't know what word that we use, holistic, mindful, healing, psycho-spiritual, all, you know. I don't know. I'm an old man now, but I'm joking. So, you have that in there, but I don't really have that per se. We'll focus on that at the end, okay? I'm teaching and sharing, but mostly as an experiential aspect, because I think it's important to understand as well. It's one of the eight parts of the Eightfold Path is wise understanding, as well as wise mindfulness, as well as wise effort. This is what I'm teaching, wise effort, wise understanding of what's happening in that regard. So the context of can we open to and can we welcome our wounds? It's just not easy when our first reaction is to get rid of it. And it sounds true. They had a whole 30-day, I don't know if anybody heard it, it was all the psycho-spiritual teachings of a lot of the main teachers, meditation teachers, psychotherapists, thought leaders, as it were. Someone I remember, Gabrielle Bernstein has become popular. And they all have Marianne Williamson, you've heard of her, she's running for president. It was really interesting. I knew all of them. I'm friendly with some of them. I studied with them. I learned from them. I heard their tapes. I read their books. I spent my early career, before there was Spirit Rock or anything, just sitting on retreats with Jack all the time and Joseph Goldstein, who were my main teachers. And this is what I gleaned from that. These were like the top people from Jack, Tara Brach also. You know what they all shared? They all shared their wounds. They all shared their own pain. They all shared their story of their childhood trauma or some pain or some difficulty or some illness. They were all wounded teachers or wounded healers or wounded human beings. And what enabled them or allowed them or encouraged them to then become teachers was because of what they went through in their own journey, facing their own pain, facing their own issues. They weren't enlightened beings that somehow got, blessed by Shaktipat suddenly. They faced difficulties. They faced their own pain and suffering. It was really interesting. They each had a different story, but they all said the exact same thing. And that's all of us here. We're human. We have a story. We're hurt. We got this, we got that. We have something that's happening that we're not wanting to happen. You know? And if you've heard of, this was at a Sounds True thing that I was at. I forget her name, but she's a writer. And she wrote a book of prayer, on prayer. But it's instructive. I want to share it now because it's quite simple. The title of the book is Help, Thanks, Wow. And what it was is, help, life is hard, I'm suffering, I was this, I was that, I've struggled, help, help me. You know, I'm in pain, this is hard. Right? Thank you. Gratitude for the support, for the healing, for the wisdom of whatever you may come to. And wow, life is wonderful. So our challenge is how we integrate all of those things. And that's a choice. So I'm going to read one thing, and then we're going to go to the next meditation. This is Jack Kornfield's teacher, Ajahn Chah. And this is, I think, also, I'm pretty much saying the same thing over and over and over again in a different way, so that each of you may hear it, and it will, you know, gestate or... You know, I'm just watering your soil of awareness. There are two kinds of suffering. The suffering which leads to more suffering and the suffering which leads to the end of suffering. Using as the example of recovery from an addiction. I'm a drug addict. Give me another drug. I think it's helping me in the moment because I'm getting free. I'm not judging that. This is not simple. Or... I'm going to stop. If you've ever been with a friend or support person that has recovered or is in recovery from addiction, there's a lot of suffering in recovery, in healing, from whatever, mind, body, spirit. A lot of pain, a lot of suffering. I work with the archdiocese. I've gotten a few patients from abuse. Trauma, abuse that you've shared from childhood. Okay, a lot of suffering that people carry. In our culture, the horror of 30 years later, women, you know, talking about what Bill Cosby did to them. Or, forget the other guy that's not popular, but that we know, Harvey Weinstein. And just today, I saw, before coming here from my hotel, I saw the Catholic Church, the Pope, finally got rid of a bishop that had been known to be accusing people. And it was a thing that they're finally acknowledging nuns have been that. So we live in a culture where there's a lot of suffering happening. Okay. So there's two kinds. One leads to more, one leads to the end. The first is the pain of grasping after fleeting pleasure and aversion for the unpleasant. We're not wrong or bad that we want, give me this and I don't want that. The continued struggle of most people day after day. The second is the suffering which comes when you allow yourself to feel fully the constant change of experience, to just be with it, without the story that we tell ourselves. Because when we change how we look at it, the experience changes a little bit. We can be with it. We can be with that truth. To feel the constant change, the pleasure, the pain, the joy, the anger, without fear withdrawal, the suffering of our experience leads to inner fearlessness and peace. Okay. Now, those are just words. What choice do we have? But we have a choice. There's two kinds of suffering. We have a choice. I can stay addicted to how I'm being, or I can... move in the other direction. And there will be suffering in both instances. It's not either or. There's no magic cure. My phrase that I like, and I didn't make this up, there's no cure for the human condition. There just is no cure. There's a healing journey and a spiritual path, and the choice to embark on it and welcome it and learn from it and let it teach you. And you've seen a zillion times the metaphor. I taught at Omega recently. Lesser, I forget her first name, wrote a beautiful book, Broken Open, How Crises Helps You Heal. It breaks, you know, it's like you break your heart open to the place that's unbreakable and whole. So I can say to you, in the heart of the pain is the healing. In the suffering is the end of suffering. The truth is what liberates us, not our desire to get out of it. These are just words. But the beauty is our practice, if we practice it with these intentions and compassion, it gives us, I can be with it. One last story, and then we'll meditate. I had a center in Israel for a number of years, and I had a patient came to me who was a colonel in the Israeli Air Force. And he came to me, he had just been diagnosed with a particular kind of cancer and was not given a good prognosis or diagnosis. Why did he come to me? Because he's scared. Also natural healing, and maybe we can, but of course, fix me and heal me. Of course, as a doctor, let's find the right treatment. Let's give your body and mind what it needs for healing. But particularly, his doctor said, because he was really scared. It's scary. Not easy to be told you have this disease and, you know, it's unlikely that you're going to recover. How do you be with that? That's not an easy thing to do. And his doctor also said, like, you know, it's not good to be scared. Well, so we had to help him be scared. So he came to me, why are you here? Like, I want to get rid of my fat because I'm fat and ugly, or why are you here? Because I'm scared and I don't want to be scared. Well, I said to him, I said, I can help you be with your fear. That's different than helping you not be afraid. Because quite frankly, it's scary. And to deny that and to try not to be afraid is really going to keep you stuck in it. And so we had a couple of sessions and did some mindfulness and did some counseling. And, you know, I was working with him, and he was a colonel in the Israeli Air Force, very nice man, young man, but they're not allowed to show fear or emotion, or, you know, there's a stoicness that takes place there. And this is a simple thing. I didn't cure him. I didn't heal him. I didn't take away anything. But he said something that I thought was instructive in the context of today's retreat. He said, you know, Dr. Epstein, it's interesting. I still have cancer and I'm still afraid. But something changed. I can be with it now. It's okay. Now, I'd love that to cure, but I know that shift in relationship, whether I give him an herb or cleanse his immune system or teach him to do imagery with him or a whole host of mind-body therapies to go with chemotherapy and surgery and radiation, whatever he chooses to do, but I know the power of that mind shift is changing his body, is changing his immune system. Because when you hold fear, when you hold hurt, and you hold anger, and you hold grief, and you hold shame, you can think it's not affecting you. You don't get a heart attack overnight. You don't get cancer overnight. And you know, that's not to blame anybody. It's the context of, don't bypass it. If those statements are true, then how do I help people? Should I help them get rid of, which in one way is the suffering that leads to more suffering? Or do I help them face it and give them the tools? And then do what you need to do to try to treat it properly, to heal it, but with an energy of acceptance and love. Not either or, okay? You with me? Basically, in honor of Valentine's Day, love is the healer. Now, that sounds really silly because we don't love it. We hate it. We hate the parts of ourselves that cause our suffering. We hate it. I don't want to be like this. Good luck. You are like that. I don't know if you've had him here as a speaker, but when I went through CDL like 20 years ago, 25 years ago, I forgot his name, one of the monks. He has a great talk, if you can find it. which I love the title. He says, it shouldn't be this way, but it is. Now what? Right? It shouldn't be this way, but it is. Now what? So we can't run away from ourselves, is pretty much the bottom line. So let's close our eyes, and now we want to meditate on the body.